The Doctor Is In is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.
Hi, Dr. Ray. How are you?
I'm sure I'm going to get really good advice from you.
Why do I have to be the insightful professional?
You just patted yourself on the back.
I'm losing you, buddy. I don't know what you're trying to say.
You're just so great. I love your show.
Am I close?
No.
Does that comfort you?
No.
I'm sorry, and I'm going to confess it, because I'm a holy guy.
I'm a little intimidated to talk to you because you used a lot of big words.
You know, I was looking for a deeper answer.
You came to the wrong place. You came to the wrong place if you're looking for deep answers.
Now, from the studios of Living Bread Radio Network in Canton, Ohio, the hometown of Mother Angelica, here's Dr. Ray.
The older I get, especially to my children, the greater I used to be, the farther I walked. That's the way it was when I was a kid. Three channels. I was my father's remote. Bop me on the head. Raymond, change the channel. Raymond, turn it down. I was the remote. We only had three channels. That's the way it was when I was a boy. And we were happy children. We were grateful for what little we had. My children would say, "What'd you have, Dad?" "Nothing. Weren't you listening?" I have to get this cough, this candy out of my mouth here. This is Look Back Friday, where we take previous calls. They are edited through the capable technical hands of Andrew Kruchek. We replace some of them here, and then I extrapolate. I embellish. I get to say more. One might say, well, the reasons for this are to be more helpful. I suppose that's a byproduct, but the real reason for it is I get to talk more. Now, let's get down to the nitty-gritty here. I get to say more. I didn't get to say enough the first time around. So we shall get to those calls. You want something that's going to humble you? I'll tell you. You want to be humbled? You think you know how you'll act in situations. You think, when I say you, I mean me too. You can predict what you will do when confronted by a situation. Especially when that situation is something you've never confronted before. Or emotionally charged, or highly tempting. You think, I know who I am. I know my moral sturdiness. I'm pretty confident that I wouldn't do that, or I would do that. That's what you do. You say this. So why am I saying that should humble you? Because these wascally psychologists have done things to assess how well people can predict. Now, again, they can't set up real-life situations that are difficult, but they do set up situations, and they ask people what they would do if placed in those situations, and what they found was an awful lot of difference, a big difference between the way they said they would act and the way they actually acted when placed in the situation. Why is this? Well, because we want to think more positively of ourselves. I wouldn't want to think I'm capable of doing that. I wouldn't want to think that I would sacrifice my morals or my well-being or somebody else's well-being for a situation that could come up where I would act out of character. And by the way, it's not out of character. It's perfectly within character, given that that's the way you acted in that situation. Let me give you a standard example. Not unusually in my office, spouses will come in after the discovery of adultery. Adultery that perhaps had been going on for a while and was caught. Upon being caught, some percentage of the time, the offending spouse says, okay, I don't want to lose you. I don't want to lose the kids. The relationship's over. I'm cutting it off, and I'm so sorry. I was wrong, and I'm going to do everything I can to make this marriage work. The offended spouse routinely says, I always thought, I believed, I was convinced that if my spouse ever was unfaithful, the marriage would be over. I could not live with someone that I couldn't trust. That's it. And here I am, sitting in therapy, wanting to save my marriage. That's right. Because when the reality happened, they realized what was at stake. Years of raising children together, single parenthood, singleness, the ugliness of a divorce, all kinds of things. They were shocked. They thought for certain they could predict how they were going to act, and they didn't. One of my personal prayers of gratitude is that I thank God that I'm not placed in situations that really push me. Now, I know there's scripture that says, of course, God will not allow you to be tempted beyond your ability, and if such would happen, he'd give you the strength to resist. I believe that. Unfortunately, it is reality that people don't take advantage of that strength. They do resist. The guy that says, I would never, ever look at pornography, ever, ever, ever look at pornography, he's in a hotel room. He's traveling. He's away from home. The channels are there. Well, just, you know, kind of check it out and see. Sure. When put in the situation, we're not perfect at predicting how we're going to act. And that's humbling. That's very, very humbling. And one of the prayers should be, don't put me in that situation, Lord. I don't want to take the chance. That's one thing. Another thing is we want to see ourselves as impervious to temptation. Or impervious to distress, a highly charged emotional situation. Let's say a parent who says, I could never, ever, I can't see myself. Now, this is when the child is 12. I could never see myself kicking my child out of my house. That is beyond my ken. I would not feel loving at all. It's not something I can do. And then at age 19, this former 12-year-old becomes so difficult, so uncooperative, so disrespectful, that the parent says, get out. Get out. You see, they predicted how they thought they would act, but they missed it. Because one of the reasons is we underestimate the emotional intensity of a situation in reality. When a child is 12 and he still loves you a whole lot, wants to cooperate, well, okay, maybe I better go back to 9. When he's a little kid, and you just can't imagine that this little kid who just adores you could someday be a 20-year-old who wants no part of you, you can't imagine that. So as a result, you would say, there's no way I could tell my child to get out of my house. No way. But you see, you didn't have the predictable power to say, I never thought that could happen. And furthermore, I never thought it would affect me that way. So I guess the lesson in all this, be humble. Hope and pray that you know how you're going to react in some situations. And furthermore, that when the situation arises, that you react perhaps in a more moral way than you thought you would. Like the spouse who says, I want to save my marriage when I thought I was going to walk out. That's a better way to respond. That's good. She didn't predict how she would react, but it was better how she reacted. In other cases, we yield to the temptation. Comes down to, in a lot of respects, no matter how much we think we know ourselves, there's always gaps. That's why God knows us a whole lot better. He could predict perfectly how we'd react. I'm Dr. Ray.
I'm done talking. Don't talk to me anymore. You hear me?
Okay. Don't blame me if your kids are on Springer. Delighted to have you with me here on
The Doctor Is In with Dr. Ray Guarendi.
In 3, 2, 1.
The most original and exclusive Catholic content is on EWTN Radio.
Hosting Women Made New has helped me deepen my own faith, and I look forward to every weekend having those in-depth discussions with my guests. It's been such a blessing being a part of the EWTN family and carry on the mission that Mother Angelica started.
Women Made New, Saturday, noon Eastern on EWTN Radio.
Does everyone go to heaven?
The Christian church had a clear position on this issue through the centuries, and it was not that everyone is saved.
Why would a loving God send anyone to hell?
In heaven, it isn't that all of our questions will suddenly be answered. It's as we will realize that there was never any question at all.
Ave Maria Radio and Renewal Ministries are pleased to present this roundtable discussion on universalism. Dr. Michael McClyman.
The prophets all emphasized the importance of choice and consequences of choices.
Al Cresta.
And he said, enter through the narrow gate. Why is the path to destruction?
And Ralph Martin.
Why would you bother to help another person come to know Christ and believe in him and repent if you think that in the end we're all going to be saved?
Provide clear reasons why the presumption that all are saved is radically inconsistent with Scripture and church teaching.
Hardly anybody knows what the official teaching of the Catholic Church is.
Universalism. Not Christian, not universal. Find it on the homepage of the Ave Maria Radio website, avemariaradio.net.
Underwritten in part by this not-for-profit.
Are you looking for peace? Longing for joy? Want to meet the giver of all goodness? God is calling the laity to bring Ignatian prayer into a suffering world. Work for the new evangelization. Go to LordTeachMeToPray.com. Order your free digital training and manual. Find true happiness and everlasting joy. Go to LordTeachMeToPray.com.
And click on the red button today.
It's free. Approved by the USCCB.
Working on a new book on human relations. And this is one of the themes throughout the book. When do you cut somebody off? Now, my experience as a shrink is that we cut them off for less cut-offable reasons than we should. All right? And that's one of the points I make. These people are not a danger to our physical self or our well-being, but we cut them off because they're pains in the buckets. Or they say a lot of nasty things, or we don't like them. Now, this is not the neighbor lady six doors down. Or this is not somebody that you come across at church at the 8 o'clock Mass. What if it's your brother, as Colin asks?
I have an older brother who's got quite the history of kind of alcohol and some drugs and bankruptcy and you know, borrowing a lot of money and not repaying it back. And this goes on, you know, this has been going on for the last couple decades. And, you know, forgiving him for all that. And he actually was doing a lot better with his life, was concentrated on saving money. And you know, he hasn't been on alcohol or drugs for a really long time or anything like that. But has essentially gotten to the place where, you know, he's dating a girl now, and he's starting to spend all the money on her. And, you know, he's mid-40s, and he doesn't have a single dollar to his name. And he's, you know, spent basically like $10,000 on an engagement ring. And he's putting all his efforts.
Making bad judgments.
Yeah, making a lot of bad judgments. And our relationship was actually, the last about 3 or 4 years, was doing really well, especially over COVID. We were talking a lot, really repairing a lot of old wounds. We both kind of were digging more into our faith. And but then this girl kind of comes out of the blue, and, you know, he's making all these bad judgments, and I'm trying to, and she comes with a whole package of drama. You know, I'm not trying to be too judgmental, but I'm looking out for him. And, well, when he realizes that, you know, I'm not exactly a big fan of her, he essentially just started kind of attacking me personally and attacking my other brother personally.
Well, did you learn a lesson, Colin?
Well, I did, and so I...
How long did it take you? How long did it take you before you realized you better shut up about this girl?
Well, pretty quick. I didn't shut up about it, because, you know, for my last 33 years, I've been shutting up to him. You know, I'm the youngest brother. But, you know, it comes a time where you kind of got to stand up for what's right. And so that was really, I think, a big surprise to him was, oh, he's actually, you know, my little brother's actually standing up against me now. He's not just taking what I'm putting down. And so that created a lot, increased the friction even more. And so now we're to the point where I've just, you know, he attacked me personally, and so I've just kind of cut him out and have blocked him. And but I guess my question is that the right thing to do? And is there, you know, what moral obligation do I have him as my brother? And what should I do moving forward to kind of keep a window open, or a door open, rather?
Well, there's nothing wrong with having contact with him. He's not going to hurt you. He's not trying to borrow money off of you, because you're not going to let him. He's not trying to manipulate you, because you're not going to let him. He's just dating some girl that's probably bad news for him, and he doesn't want to listen to you. And you didn't listen to that the first time you made a comment and you saw his reaction. You figured, oh, better not go there. No, you didn't do that. You thought to yourself, I'll just keep trying to guide him onto the straight and narrow. Now, you had 2 decades of experience with your brother, knowing he just doesn't want to hear whatever anybody tells him, correct?
True.
So I don't know. Hey, think about this. Now, don't take this the wrong way, Colin. Don't take this the wrong way. Who is the slower learner, you or your brother? Because he keeps making all the same dumb moves, which are much more broad-based than yours, but you keep trying to tell him how to live better, and he gets madder and madder at you. So my suggestion would be, This could be really a tough one. Not only keep connection with him, he is your brother, right? So you're not going to cut him off. He's not a danger to you. He's not a threat. He's just dumb. He just makes really bad decisions, and he piles one on top of another. All right, and here's the second part that might be really even tougher. If and when you have some contact with him and this new girl, treat her nice. Don't hold back. Be kind to her. Ask her about herself. Show her that you think she's a valuable human being, even though in the back of your mind you're thinking, boy, I tell you what, she's bad news for him. But he's going to have to see that himself, isn't he?
Yeah, and that's what we had already – I had always done that. I had met her and always – been very respectful, and, you know, she came over to my parents' house last Christmas, and she didn't like something that someone in our family said about some subject, and she left the engagement ring, she left everybody's Christmas presents that we all got her, and we thought that was that, and even my brother was like, okay, I'm done with her, she's crazy, and you know, deep down inside, we're like, oh, yes, finally, but then the next day, he disappears, and he, you know, chases after her, and, but I mean, no, I get what you're putting down. You know, he's not dangerous, so I shouldn't. I guess a little bit of me is.
You know what you're frustrated with? Because he doesn't listen. He's been doing the same stuff forever,
And sadly, unless I think he really comes to a Jesus moment, or in fact he grows a little bit, this guy's just going to keep piling one bad move on top of another. Unfortunately, our lives are filled with people like this now, Colin. You know that. They're all over the place. When we have someone in our family, parent, adult child, cousin maybe, somebody in the family, father-in-law, you got to go a lot further to cut them off. This is not a friend who has turned on you. You have no moral obligations to say a friend with somebody who's obnoxious. But you might with a family member who is. Much of the time when we cut somebody off, it's because they're unpleasant. They're hostile. They say things, hurtful things. And we just get upset at that. We take it personally. How dare they? So we think, you know, I'm better off without you in my life, even though you happen to be my sister or my mother or my wife's mother. We do this. So as a result, I think you ask the question, why am I thinking of separation here? And if the answer is, I find this person obnoxious, I find this person quite hard to take, if that's the answer, and this person is a reasonably close relative, then you have to say to yourself, what can I do to minimize their effect on me? Okay, so my sister-in-law is a snark. She fires off her shots, and I'm sick of it. I'm sick of putting up with it. But it happens to be my wife's sister. And it happens to be my wife's mother's daughter. Oh, boy. So what can I do to give this woman's snarks less bite? Why am I getting so distraught by what she says? Just dumb words.
She didn't say it.
Well, okay, she shouldn't say it, but she did. Well, when's she going to change? Probably never. So, to get along with her, you got to ignore half of what comes out of her mouth. This doesn't mean she has to be one of your favorite people and you can't wait to spend Christmas Eve with her. But it means for your sister's sake or your mother-in-law's sake or the overall peace of the family's sake that you figure out how to immunize yourself, at least somewhat, to her obnoxiousness. Now, whenever I think somebody's obnoxious, my following thought is, I wonder who thinks that about me. Now, I've gotten a few emails that confirm that. There are people who think that. I just like to think they don't know me, right, the fluffy side of me. But I always think, okay, am I obnoxious to somebody? So the question really becomes, I think there's an inverse relationship here. The closer the relationship, familially, I think, the less likely you should be to consider shunning them. You may cut your contacts back. You don't have to go to breakfast with them every 3 weeks. But you can say to yourself, what can I do for myself? You're not going to change them, but for myself, to give them less emotional power over me so that I don't feel driven to get them out of my life.
Catholic Connection with Teresa Tomeo.
While I was working at this Protestant station, in the midst of being challenged by former Catholics, I received this book from Ascension Press, and I became hooked on apologetics. I discovered Catholic Answers. I discovered EWTN. I started listening to all these programs. I would just go to local Catholic bookstores and grab every single book I could on apologetics. Deep in my heart, I knew that it was true, and I trusted the Church for her 2,000 years of teaching. I knew a certain amount of scripture, but I wasn't able to defend it as well. That period of my life where I worked in Christian radio and was challenged by former Catholics, as painful as it was one of the best things that ever happened to me because it really forced me to dive in more deeply and fall even more in love with the Catholic Church.
Catholic Connections, Teresa Tomeo. Weekdays, 9 a.m. Eastern on EWTN Radio.
Who belongs to the Catholic Church? According to the Catholic Catechism, all men and women are called to the Catholic unity of the people of God. In different ways, they belong or are ordered to belong. The Catholic faithful, other believers in Christ, and all mankind are called by God's grace to salvation. Those who in faith accept all the precepts, sacraments, and all the means of salvation given to the Church and possess the Spirit of Christ are fully incorporated into the society of the Church. One, however, who does not persevere in charity is not saved. He or she remains in the bosom of the Church, in its body, but not in its heart. The Church is joined in many ways to other faiths that call themselves Christian, even though they do not profess the Catholic faith in its entirety or have not preserved unity or communion under the successors of Peter. This is Peggy Stanton, and this has been the Order of Malta's Minute with the Catechism.
Every so often we throw in some kind of cosmopolitan, rather, well, I would say sophisticated music, just to add to the overall puissance. Well, actually, somebody told me it was pronounced puissance of the program. Good to have you with me. Speaking of puissance, this is Look Back Friday. It is usually what we do on a Friday, although sometimes we dispense with it and have typical call-in. We take previous calls, and I want to just extrapolate. There might be something in the call that was confusing, and I didn't answer it at the time. There might be a term used. There might be some directions that I could have gone in and wanted to go in, but the caller was saying this was more critical to their question. So we use Look Back Friday to do all of that. Now, Kara from Texas has a teen daughter who, Kara says, is same-sex attracted. And there are some complications regarding how she's expressing this.
She is 16 and a half. And we've talked about this, you know, her sexual orientation openly at times, and I consider myself a pretty strict parent. She says I'm always very strict, and so I've allowed her, like, I don't let her spend the night at anybody's house and certain things like that. She's not allowed to go to certain places without me, and so I've allowed her to continue to just kind of cut her hair in a masculine way and wear her clothes, you know, wear clothes that are more of a boyish style. And so, but now I'm starting to, like, as she continues with it, and I guess what bothered me is because she cut her hair. She cuts her own hair. I don't pay for it either, though, by the way. But she cut her hair again last night really short, and I really want to tell her, I don't want you cutting your hair anymore. I just want it while you're still a minor or, you know, under 18. I don't want you cutting your hair like that anymore. But I don't know if I'm going to be closing more doors to being able to reach her. Because, you know,
hair, is she saying anything with the cutting of the hair?
She just says that she likes it, that it's more comfortable, especially like even with wearing the more loose clothing. Sometimes she buys some of her clothes in the boy section because she doesn't like the way the girls' clothes fit. She just says she feels more comfortable.
So you're saying, Kara, that you're not sure what this means. You're not saying that your daughter is same-sex attracted. You're saying she just seems to have non-traditional views.
Oh, no, she is same-sex. She has said she's same-sex. She's confirmed that to me, that she's same-sex attraction. I see.
I think you might want to talk with her about where did this come from? Is this something that, and don't answer these questions, these are just some things you could ask her. Is this something that she has been experiencing, say, for the last 10 years? Is this something that she has talked with her friends about? How is it that she is coming to the conclusion that she is same-sex attracted? And what does that mean? How does she view that regarding her faith? How does she view that regarding her future as a potential mother? So explore all of the ramifications of her deciding I am same-sex attracted. You want to establish that she doesn't think this because she is what used to be called at one point a tomboy. Now anything like that is viewed as, well, that's what you must be. You must be, in fact, same-sex attracted, because that would be the message she would get from her peers. If she would say, I like boy clothes, I like to cut my hair this way, they would say, well, that probably means you're gay. So you got to explore that with her. You got to know inside her head how she's making this decision, how long it's been around, where it's coming from, what does she think the future will hold. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
That's the way I would approach that. My guess would be, at least at this point, most kids haven't thought through all the implications. They haven't. And they think that, well, okay, this is who I am. This must be who I am. Well, let's dig a little deeper in that and see if, in fact, because 90%+ of teenage girls who experience same-sex attraction or gender confusion return to their biological sex as they leave their teens. Many years ago in our culture, and pretty much throughout the culture's history, if someone had same-sex attraction, the culture clearly was unaccepting of this, and they were unaccepting even in a hostile way. As a result, for someone to embrace an active same-sex attraction lifestyle was much, much, much more difficult. These were kids who either had been sexually abused or who had gender confusion. It was not all that common that a child would choose and say, okay, I just want to live a same-sex lifestyle. What has happened in our culture the last, oh, I'd say 10, 20 years, is that the youth culture applauds same-sex attraction. The youth culture doesn't just accept it. They view it as something that is new. It is to be celebrated. So as a result, there is confusion among a lot of kids. And you'll get this. Kids will think I'm same-sex attracted, and then at some point in their maturation process, they will say, no, I'm not. It was something I went through. Now, I'm not trivializing at all those kids who do express same-sex attraction. I'm simply saying that any time you have a culture that applauds certain behavior, you're going to get more of that behavior. And whether the kids are indeed gender confused or in fact responding. For example, I'll just give you a small example. There was a survey done of adolescents, and 20% of them, 20% now, in all of the surveys ever done, it's between 1% and 3%. 20% claimed some same-sex attraction or transgender poll. 20%. Okay, that's roughly 8 to 10 times in a short period of time. One could legitimately ask, are there sociocultural factors involved in this? And I think more and more professionals are starting to take a look and say, we need to explore this because among peers, this is a very, not only acceptable, but celebrated thing. And any time you have something like that among peers, you're going to get more of it.
On 10 with Monsignor Charles Pope.
The second commandment, you shall not take the name of the Lord your God in vain. The disclosure of a name in the ancient world belonged to the order of trust and intimacy. And so when God revealed his name to Moses, it was an extraordinary outreach to us, saying that we were called to an intimate, trusting relationship with him. And so we should always reverence this name as a great gift. We should obviously never use God's name to curse or to blaspheme or to berate others. God's name is meant to bring blessing. And likewise, the vain use. Vain means empty. So some of these expressions like, oh my God, or, you know, and so on, need to be avoided as well. Vain means empty, and those are using God's name as an empty kind of expression of exasperation. And then finally, never ever to use God's name to swear an oath falsely. God is the God of truth. The second commandment, you shall not take the name of the Lord your God in vain.
For more about the Ten Commandments, visit EWTNRC.com.
There's a notorious lack of honesty and far too much sentimentality when we discuss race in America. And it doesn't serve anyone very well in the long run. Right now, of course, the political left in America is exploiting the deaths of George Floyd and Walter Scott and others to exaggerate the degree of racism among police departments. And this exaggeration of injustice is what Karl Marx called heightening the contradiction. It was a precursor, not to reform, but to revolution. And it is important, especially for Christians, to see George Floyd as a brother in Christ. Christ died for George Floyd, but he also died for Derek Chauvin. And as I've said before on this program, I do think criminal justice reform is necessary. But my principal job as a Catholic communicator is not politics, but to share biblical truth. Racial injustice results from Christians failing to apply the fundamental truth that we are all created in God's image.
Cresta in the Afternoon with Al Cresta. 4 Eastern on EWTN Radio.
Did some mathematical calculation. Those bumper spots are roughly 30 seconds. Now, if I jump in and talk at the 5-second mark on those bumper spots, that means there's 25 seconds of music that I didn't take advantage of. So let me just do the math here. I've got, let's say I go all the way to the end. Music's done. It's 25 extra seconds I didn't say a word before I finally say something. Now, we have bumper music coming in at 1, 2, 3, 4 times. We have 4 breaks throughout the show. So that would be 4 times 25 seconds. That's 80 seconds. That would mean, given the breaks and the times that the show begins and ends, the show is roughly 50 minutes long. 80 seconds. I would need to do that for approximately, say, 40 shows, 42 shows, and I will have earned a totally free show. Wouldn't have said a word. 42 shows. So that's what, that's 2 months. If I do that for 2 months, I've earned a free show. Never thought of it that way. Kind of cool. This Look Back Friday
see what we got there. Okay, I do have Pat. Pat is a female from Virginia. She's got a 35-year-old son. And this is the one of the top interpersonal relationship therapy matters I deal with, which is parents calling me about their adult son or daughter and how they're running their life. So let's see what Pat has to say about this. Her adult son has two young children that Pat has not seen for the past 3 years. So 3 years ago, for whatever the reason, the adult son, if he is married, the adult son and the daughter-in-law have said, we don't want anything to do with you. Now, the adult son's sister's getting married, and he said, I ain't gone. No way. Does that surprise you?
No, it doesn't, but it still hurts.
Well, I understand that.
And there's always the looming thing of ought we do say more? You know, we've done tokens of outreach, you know, sending letters. His father has said, I want to see you. I want to talk to you. Given him options. Of course, we're getting nothing. You know, we have.
You can only do that for so long, Pat.
I know. And at its root, what you just said, besides your monologue, does fit our situation. The rest of the family is living with Christ at the center, and we sense that since his marriage, he and his wife have moved away from that, and we are being rejected for our faith. So I
you don't want it to be rejected because you're a jerk, do you?
Well, we're probably that too, but
What makes me convinced you're not as big a jerk as you think, because you just said we're probably that. So real jerks really don't have insight into their percentage of jerkiness.
Okay. I don't know. All I know is that there's an awful lot of hurt, and especially for the daughter that's getting married. You know, it's one thing when you reject your parents. It's another thing when you have these fantastic sisters and, you know, you're not doing anything with those relationships either.
What do the sisters think, Pat?
They're devastated.
Why would they be devastated? He hasn't been around for 3 years.
I know. And every time they ask him, he shuts down. He won't share any information with anybody. So clearly he has no intention at all of trying to heal or grow. And sadly, he has a complicated history his whole life. He has been the child that was a really challenging one, but he also had a history of a lot of abandonment trauma at a really young age. So for us, it's like we can heal this, but you have to participate, or it's going to get passed to the grandkids.
Said that I disagree with?
What?
We can heal this. It sounds like, what you're telling me is true, that you and your husband have reached out. You've tried. It sounds like his sisters have too. And he's decided, and I'm saving you for a future look back call, because I suspect this is what's going on behind the scenes, but I don't have time to get into it right now. Okay. But it sounds like he's pretty much said, I don't want anything to do with you people. That's it.
His actions are saying that. Yep.
Yeah. So for your own peace, and I think you got to talk with his sisters and say, don't take this personal.
Yeah.
He's acting like a jerk. And what are you going to do? What are you going to do? You cannot allow this to ruin your wedding day. You cannot allow this to ruin your marriage. We cannot allow this to ruin our family. If we're going to have Christmas Eve and he's not there, like he hasn't been there the last 3 years, we just got to say, well, for whatever the reason, until something changes in his head, his heart, his marriage, we ain't going to see our brother. It's not going to happen. And in his mind, I'll tell you what, Pat, and you know this is true. In his mind, it's not him. It's all you people.
Yeah.
What are you going to do?
Yeah, he has a narrative going that gives him more control.
Yeah.
I think that's what's happening.
I'm going to say to you what a mother said to me, and it's going to become one of my mantras on this program. I didn't break you. I can't fix you.
Yeah, no, I get it. I think because of the abandonment, kind of traumas when he was little.
Who abandoned him?
Well, I think I was in a horrific car accident when he was an infant, and that created a lot of instability. And so,
for how long?
Ended up
for how long, Pat?
Well, I was in a wheelchair for almost a year.
And he was an infant up to age one, right?
Oh no, he was 18 months. He was 18 months.
Okay.
Oh, up when
to,
it happened.
Okay, when it happened. So up to maybe up to age three?
Yeah, between those ages, yeah.
You want to hear my therapeutic opinion?
Yeah.
Had nothing to do with it whatsoever.
Okay.
First of all,
the substance he started messing with in middle school?
Yeah, I would say so. That's more likely. Yeah. As opposed to fact that he has no memories of those years. None.
Yeah.
You don't really remember much past age three. You don't. Beyond age three. No, you're going back the other way, is what I mean. No, you can't look at that and say, oh, somehow there's been this indelible, unconscious, subconscious feeling of neglect and abandonment, and that has reverberated all the way to age 35. My dear, if you get nothing out of this phone call, you get rid of that one.
Okay.
For heaven's sakes, get rid of that one. Well, now I have two things to address. The first one I was going to address, and I'm seeing this more. It is a generalization. I'll admit it. But just from my own personal therapeutic experience, it is more common than not that when a son writes off his family, he's married, there are dynamics with the daughter-in-law. The wife does not like the family. The wife has all manner of resentments, or they didn't accept me, or I don't like their religion, or they interfere in our lives. Whatever it is that she is using to bludgeon the family, she either convinces him, and he's vulnerable to be convinced, and or he's trying to keep some kind of peace in his marriage, so he knows he has to live with her, and he better just go along with her negativity towards his family, because if he didn't, his marriage would suffer and he would be miserable. I see that dynamic a lot. Not saying that's the way it is here, but I do see it. The other one is, can you point to something way back in a kid's childhood and say, that's it, that's what did it? Now, in this case, Pat is pointing to that year and a half, she was in a wheelchair and not able to be the mom that she wanted to be, and she ended up being anyway. And she thought, oh boy, this is the problem. No, rarely is it something like that, unless it's a traumatic kind of experience. She said things that indicated this one has always been difficult to raise. And little aside there, he got into drugs in middle school. Now, the third thing is this. Maybe this is my temperament. If I have a member of my family or an adult child who decides that they will rebuff any of my efforts to reach out, to apologize, to connect somehow, however fragile that connection might be, and they make it clear they're not going to, my response is, this is now not my problem. This is your problem. This is who you are, and I will not absorb your behavior to make myself miserable over what you are doing. Now, is that due to my temperament? I think it might be more due to the fact that I've been a shrink for a long time, and I see repeatedly how you can't make someone be charitable or kind or decent or accepting. You can't. So as a result, I know personally, if I had a child who for 3 years wants nothing to do with me, all right, I've reached out to you. I probably would send one last missive, and I would say something to the effect that it's been ever so clear to me that you really want no contact with me. I will respect that. But I want you to know the door is open if you ever do want to come back, reconnect, and talk. I'll always love you. I'll always pray for you. And then that would be it. That'd be my final move as a dad. And from that point forward, I would no longer invest misery in the fact that this kid has cut off his whole family. The difficulty is his. It's not ours. It's his. There is the crux of the matter. I'm Dr. Ray.
Save the date. Saturday, August 26th is the day, and Birmingham, Alabama is the place for the 2023 EWTN Family Celebration. We're celebrating Mother Angelica's love for the Eucharist, and join us to mark the centennial year of Mother's birth. Make your plans now to attend this free event. More details coming soon at our Family Celebration webpage, EWTN.com/Family Celebration.
I'm angry, frustrated. Sound like you? Someone you know? Well, it could be any of us from time to time. But there's different types of anger. It's not so cut and dry. Hi, everybody. I'm Dr. Ray. One thing is for sure, you don't need to suffer with anger frustration. In my book, Living Calm, Mastering Anger and Frustration, you'll learn whether your anger is a product of your nature or your nurture, and how to regulate those emotions and those thoughts. You can get Living Calm and all my other books at AveMariaRadio.net.
Ave Maria Mutual Funds does not invest in companies engaged in abortion, pornography, embryonic stem cell research, and those making corporate contributions to Planned Parenthood. Ave Maria Mutual Funds has a zero-tolerance policy that helps ensure investments align with moral beliefs. Ave Maria Mutual Funds may be contacted at 1-866-AVE-MARIA or online at AveMariaFunds.com, a proud sponsor of Ave Maria Radio.
Underwritten in part by the following nonprofit.
Do you have an insurance plan that pays for everything, even things you don't believe in? There are options. You can join Solidarity HealthShare, a faith-based health-sharing community. Plus, Solidarity HealthShare can save you money with prices starting as low as $384 a month for families.
Call to see how much you can save. 844-398-9399. That's 844-398-9399.
Don't have a whole lot of time, so I'm cutting in on the 5 seconds. This is C.S. Lewis. When we want to be something other than the thing God wants us to be, we must be wanting what, in fact, will not make us happy. I'm reading a book right now called The Moral Wisdom of the Catholic Church by Father Robert Spitzer. In it, he basically takes the church's moral stances on all matter of things, particularly those in the sexual, reproductive, marriage area, and looks at the research on what happens when you go against the way God says is the best way to live. And the research is overwhelmingly consistent. It leads to all kinds of bad outcomes. The research is not Christian research. It's not Catholic research. It's secular research. It's psychological. It's sociological. It's biological. It is research. And Lewis pointed this out in The Problem of Pain. You go against, whether you realize it or not, and many people don't realize it. They have no idea what God says is the best way to live morally. But when you go against it, you inevitably run up against problems. May take a while. It's like, you know, you jump out of a plane at 30,000 feet with no parachute, and you say, so far, so good, until you hit. You can resist gravity for a while, but gravity's going to eventually win. Same thing with moral gravity. it eventually hits you. You don't realize it. You don't know why you're discontent. You don't know why your life is fracturing. You don't know why you're on your third marriage. You don't know any of this stuff. But a lot of it is because you've decided to live in a way that is disparate from the way God says. And if somebody were to say, what is that? You'd have to say, I don't know, because you haven't looked into it. And we got more and more in our culture of that level of obliviousness. Thanks, Andrew Krucek. Thank you, all of you, for joining me. I'm Dr. Ray. Walk with God. He knows the best walk.
For information on Dr. Ray's presentations, books, and CDs, visit DRA.com and follow him on Facebook. The Doctor Is In is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.